but I remember that name. Okay. You're too young to be married to this guy, number one.
So oh, I'll tell you that.
Call the ZBA meeting to order May 6th at 6 p.m. Could you all please stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I have a roll call, please?
Certainly. Board Member McNeil?
Present.
Board Member Butterworth?
Here.
Board Member Adams?
Here.
Board Member Maffeo?
Here.
Board Member Montorsi?
Here.
And alternate Hernandez is absent.
Okay, we have a quorum, and there is no executive session. All right, we continued the public hearing from last month. So the first item on the agenda is public hearings 26 ZBA 1, the owners. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. And I'm actually, there's an error that I had to talk about. Okay. Did anybody find any errors with the meetings, minutes from last meeting?
Nope. This says approval.
We all agreed, I think, last month that on public hearings, we were going to give the applicant only 3 minutes for their presentation, right? All right, we're going to the... Forget it. We're going to stick with the five. We're going to stick with the five.
I have enough to do here. Don't do this.
I make a motion to approve the minutes from the April 1st meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made in second. Any discussion? So moved. All in favor, aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
So moved.
Okay, now. Public hearing 26 ZBA 1, owners Thomas DeMauro and Stacy Roblinski. Applicant Thomas DeMauro for appeal of January 13th, 2026, cease and desist letter of the CEO officer regarding property located at 836 Route 32. Could I please first ask for the staff report? I can't get that anymore. Okay, we're going to pass that. We already got the handouts. Okay, applicant. Could you please step up to the podium, state your name, please?
Good evening, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, my name is John Chase. I represent the appellant tonight, Thomas DeMauro. And
excuse me, one more thing. Do we have the mailings there? I
have them, and I'll
okay.
get to those in just a second.
All right, great.
And as a matter of fact, why don't we do that right now? I'll be handing to Mr. Carey in just a moment a copy of the mailing receipts along with notices that were sent to all of the abutting and adjacent property owners as identified on the map that was submitted with the application. I'll do that right now.
Sure.
And that's fine if Mr. Chairman, if what I'm understanding is the preference be that exhibits and notices and so on be introduced through you, I'll do that. I mean, normally in your perhaps more common jurisdictional proceedings involving variances, you would have Mrs. Radford Stacy here acting as your staff person, as your clerk. But tonight we're here in a less common stance of hearing an appeal from.
Just to clarify to the staff that's here. The CEO stepped down since they're appealing her decision. So that's what Mr. Chase is trying to explain why he's telling us this story. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
Wait, one more piece of business. I almost forgot that. My full-time job, I'm the construction manager, director of facilities and construction for a company called Alden Associates. We're a petroleum marketer in East Hartford, Connecticut. And your company does work for it occasionally. And I want to let you know that I have no conflict, and I think I can be fair, but I'm giving you the opportunity to approve or disapprove my appearance here.
I have no concern with your appearing as a voting member and participating in your usual capacity.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. McNeil, but I thank you for pointing that out for the record. I'd also like to note in connection with the notices that there are really a couple of competing procedures floating around the town website as to when those are expected to be returned. And I do note that there is a document, again, available through the town website entitled Application Instructions for an Appeal or a Variance, which makes no requirement or purports to make no requirement that these be turned in any number of days ahead of the proceeding. So in accordance with that instruction document, I simply brought them tonight and turned them in what is generally the usual manner of such things. And so hearing no objection, we'll move on from there. As I started to say, more typically, your board will have before it an application whether to grant or deny a variance, in which case, as those of you who have been here for some time and perhaps even some of the newer folks know, you are vested with considerable discretion in determining whether or not it's appropriate to, bend or to some extent even ignore the regulations in respect to a particular property where someone is able to demonstrate a legal hardship. That is not the legal standard or the jurisdictional stance within which this matter is brought to you tonight. This is an appeal in which we are alleging that the cease and desist order that was issued by the zoning enforcement officer contains an error, which we'll get to. I would like to point out, though, that there had been a history of, I think, cooperative efforts between my client, Mr. DeMauro, and Mrs. Radford to try to determine whether or not there was, in fact, in her view, a zoning violation. There's a history of correspondence in the package you have before you tonight concerning that. And even subsequently, when those efforts reached a point where my client felt it was necessary for me to get involved, I did also reach out to Mrs. Radford in an effort to narrow the issues, and we had a successful discussion. However, we reached a point where it was simply necessary in order to preserve my client's right to appeal that he take an appeal from her order within the limited time allowed by law. And so we've used the opportunity since to pull together our evidence and to show you on the record tonight why we think the evidence that's now available to us.
Could you explain to us, for those that may not be familiar with, the reason the cease and desist was levied in the first place?
I can certainly do that. That's next on my checklist,
okay.
Mr. McNeil. Unfortunately, we have over the years had the situation of a limited amount of space to spread materials around here, so I'm going to try and proceed in the order in which I may just do that, but let's see how it goes. You have in your package a cease and desist order that was issued by the zoning enforcement officer concerning the keeping of farm animals at Mr. DeMauro's property. And I should point out that Mr. DeMauro is an owner of the 836 Route 163 property, and that's a correction. I think it was read out as Route 32 earlier. It's Route 163. Mr. DeMauro is an owner, as is his partner, Stacy Roblinski, who's with him tonight. There were actually two cease and desist orders issued. I interpreted that as an effort by the zoning enforcement officer to cover all bases. In other words, one order was issued to Mr. DeMauro. A second identical order was issued to Mrs. Roblinski. under the principle that, that zoning runs with the land, and also under the practical reality that the application fees for taking such appeals are significant, we feel that the issue will be adequately raised and resolved in the context of the of Mr. DeMauro's appeal, and we'll go from there. But Mr. DeMauro and Tom, why don't you come over and sit here so I can call on you occasionally if you need to, for the record, you know, verify or add some information. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Attorney Chase, so just to clarify, this was the cease and desist order was issued by the CEO because in this zone there's the these particular animals typically are not allowed. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so we're here for you to show us why we're wrong.
Correct. And as I mentioned, I made some effort with Mrs. Radford to try to narrow the issues down, if not.
And what do you mean by that? Can you explain that? Well, so, just briefly, narrowing it down?
Yes.
You mean like some of the animals were slaughtered? I mean,
No. I don't think that's the case, Tom.
Okay. All right. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, I'm just saying that there was animals there, and I'm not sure what was narrowed down. So maybe there was more to the cease and desist that wouldn't have been.
No. My involvement postdates the issuance of the cease and desist order on January 16th.
So this is really what it came down to. So whatever happened before that was all straightened out.
Yes. Subsequent to Mr. DeMauro enlisting me to represent him in this matter, I requested an opportunity to meet with Mrs. Radford, and we did on February 3rd. We had a productive session in an attempt to see if we could simply present through facts that were available to us at that point sufficient evidence to cause her to change her position and release her order, and although and rescind her order. And although we didn't get to that ultimate.
Is there a big reveal here? Can you just show us what the whatever happened before was interesting, but I'd like to find out why he's permitted to do this in a zone that's not.
I'm going to satisfy your curiosity,
okay.
Believe me, Mr. McNeil. But what I would like to do is to introduce into the record as well correspondence that I received from Mrs. Radford memorializing that February 3rd meeting.
Okay. All right. Did you get one of these, Mike? You want to give these one of these to Attorney Curry?
And so you'll see, Mr. McNeil, following the meeting that I mentioned with Mrs. Radford, she sent me this short email indicating, she mentioned some photographs and says, as we discussed, this photo nor others clearly indicate the type or number of animals which may have been kept on the property previously. Without this information, I cannot make a determination of the potential legal pre-existing nonconformity of this property. And that's what we're here to do tonight, to establish that the use of the property as it is used today by Mr. DeMauro for the keeping of animals. He resides there.
Could I enter, how long has he resided there?
About 18 months.
So this use pre-existed his purchase.
Yes.
And so when the last tenant left, these animals, were they part of the purchase and sale agreement?
No. There was a period of non-use, but we'll get to that as well for these purposes.
So but these animals are new animals?
They're new animals.
Okay.
They haven't lived there for years and years. But when I speak again for some of the perhaps newer members of the concept of a non-conforming use, I'm referring to a legal concept that is set forth for certainly for these purposes in your zoning regulations. The concept of legal nonconformity is derived ultimately from Section 8-13A of the Connecticut General Statutes, but your regulations, or the Town of Bonneville zoning regulations, rather, at page 36, Section 4.9, state that a nonconforming use, building, or structure shall not, I should back up and point out that a nonconforming lot, use, or structure is one which existed lawfully, whether by variance or otherwise, prior to the original date of these regulations or any amendment thereto. So if property was being put to a particular use before the date zoning was enacted in Montville, before the regulations were adapted, that use can continue. And if the regulations over time are amended, as these have also been, whatever someone is lawfully doing at a point in time that the regulations or a use that's been lawfully established, I should say, at a time or prior to the alteration or amendment of the regulations to a more restrictive or different set of allowable uses for the property may continue.
Now, just to interject a question, so you're telling me this use was not abandoned, because I know it was pre-existing non-conforming, but clearly those animals left, and this, so that to me is an abandonment, at least of the previous owner's use of that.
Well, John, you bring up, Mr. McNeil, you bring up an interesting...
Call me whatever you want.
Okay, then. You bring up something that is stated more particularly in the same area of the Montville zoning regulations, which is that a nonconforming use, building, or structure shall not be terminated or deemed abandoned unless the property owner of such use, building, or structure voluntarily discontinues such use, building, or structure, and such discontinuance is accompanied by an intent to not reestablish such use, building, or structure. And this is a reflection of the interpretation of the relevant statutes over many years by the appellate courts of the state.
That's your argument, just to let you know that you're saying that because even though the structures were still there and the corrals were still there, that the use did not cease?
The argument is that, which is supported by evidence that I'll show you in a moment, is that a nonconforming use came into being during a time back in the 1980s when the property was being used for the keeping of animals to a significant magnitude.
John, I know that. We're beyond that. We know pre-existing non-conforming. Let's go fast forward.
Well, I haven't.
The owner sold the property, took the animals away, and the structure's there. And so to me, he took the animals away. So that use went with those animals.
Why don't we do this, John, with utmost respect? Why don't I put on the evidence supporting the establishment of the use?
We've already established it was there before. Right.
Okay. Well,
Now we're here. That guy left. Right. Now we're here, and these people have new animals, and you're trying to bridge this
I'm actually trying to do is to present my appeal in an orderly fashion, including the evidence necessary to support the points raised. And so, while I should say that I appreciate your statement that we've already established that there's a nonconforming use. Frankly, that's the issue.
I think he should be allowed to present his evidence.
Excuse me.
Yep.
Can you state your name?
Yes, Attorney Matthew Willis, representing Mrs. Radford here tonight.
Okay.
And he should be allowed to present his evidence, and then I'll rebut it.
Thank you.
Perhaps everything chugging along.
Right.
Yeah, I think
I just don't want
it
to be dragged out. I mean, if you got evidence that you want to show us.
I'm going
to
do the best I can, John, but as you know, whatever decision is reached tonight can be appealed to the court by someone who claims to be aggrieved by your decision, whatever it is.
I've heard that.
And so, yes. And so what I am obligated to do in representing my client's interests is to create a record of evidence in support of the decision.
Okay, so what you're establishing now is what the previous owner, what he had. That's where we are right now, correct?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
The property was 836 Route 163 was owned from February of 1983, going forward from there, by a man by the name of Ralph Marsh, who is now 79 years old and living in North Carolina. And he was very helpful once Mrs. Radford, in the email that I shared with you a moment ago, indicated that she simply didn't have information or enough information to understand or determine the number of animals that were kept there previously, the kinds of animals that were kept there previously. That caused me to do a little bit of research with the help of my client, and we reached out to Mr. Marsh in North Carolina, who was very kind to provide an affidavit with respect to the history of his keeping of animals and his intentions with respect to these uses as time went on. And so I'm going to present that to the commission as well and provide copies to other counsel present.
Looking forward to it.
Now, bear in mind, again, back in February when I met with Mrs. Radford, the outcome was that she simply didn't have enough information as to the kinds of animals and the numbers of animals. The issue is that since approximately 2021, the Montville zoning regulations have contained a definition of farm animals, which seems to meet the different types of animals that are present here as reflected in Mrs. Radford's cease and desist order. But the regulation, the regulations in 2021 were further amended to say that a farm animal or farm animals shall be kept only on a farm as defined in section 1.3 of the regulations under the heading farm. A farm in Montville under your regulations requires 5 acres. The issue here is that Mr. DeMauro has approximately 2.2 acres. And so what we are seeking to establish is in respect of the issues that remained outstanding with Mrs. Radford is that the use of these 2.2 acres that was commenced by Ralph Marsh in the 1980s predates the more restrictive amendment of your regulations that occurred subsequently that require 5 acres for the keeping of farm animals. So Mr. Marsh gives some of his history in the affidavit, the periods of his ownership of the property. He describes it. He talks about how he built certain animal enclosures, that there's a barn on the property. He made some changes to the barn, some alterations to include horse stalls where he kept 2 horses and then subsequently some other horses. He says that he built a large riding ring for the horses. And that this is among the structures or features that are shown on a photograph, an aerial photo, dated 1987. And he points out that the oval-shaped riding ring is situated behind the barn, which is at the center of the structure. I think you can see the segment of an oval with a fence 3 or 4 rails high. And he goes on to say that subsequently, and I'm paraphrasing, but subsequent to the keeping of horses, he had some chicken coops within that riding ring. You can see at least one of them within that oval. You can see a pen structure to the left of the barn where he kept poultry or birds, including peacocks. And he goes on to say that at any one time, he had up to 90 animals, horses, ducks, peacocks, chickens, and that he kept these for, among other things, his recreational purposes, specifically in respect to the horses. He had rabbits, pheasants, golden pheasants. He says toward the end of his affidavit at paragraph 11, I always had such domestic animals besides dogs at 836 Route 163 for as long as I owned it. In the next paragraph, to the extent that the keeping of animals that I established at 836 Route 163 subsequently became a non-conforming use under the zoning regulations, at no time did I ever intend to permanently abandon any such use, despite any periods of non-use for specific animal types, and or despite my demolition or deconstruction of certain animal-related structures, such as the riding ring that I eventually took down. And that he states specifically, he makes this affidavit in support of Mr. DeMauro's appeal. Now, with regard to the issue of abandonment. And
so are we done with that part?
We're done with that part.
Already pre-existing non-conforming.
We're done with that part. And we think that...
Hold on one second. It's Mike.
Mr. Chairman, we still need... We need to know a few things before we can assume that even Mr. I forget this gentleman's name. Mr. Marsh, not Mr. Marsh, whatever his name is. The gentleman from North Carolina.
Yeah, Marsh.
According to his affidavit, he had animals there. He had certain structures there for the animals. I don't think we know whether the regulations allowed that then. I don't think we know whether he obtained permits for these structures that he put up at different times. So I don't know that we can say, based on what we've heard so far, that there was a legal use.
Legal non-conforming use.
It has to be legal when it's established. And then if the regs change or regs are adopted after that that make it illegal, that's when it's a non-conforming use. I'd also point out, although I'm sure there's going to be something coming along, it looks like Mr. Marsh's ownership, what's his name? Yeah, Mr. Marsh. It looks like Mr. Marsh's ownership period ended in 2011, but I suspect we're going to be getting something.
Yeah, I'm assuming that we'll he'll be able to address
yeah,
that.
Mr. Attorney Carey is spot on in anticipating, you know, some of the other things that I intend to discuss tonight, and he is certainly, you know, correct as to the importance or and relevance of these things. Nevertheless, I want to stress that as of February, when I met with Mrs. Radford, there were two bits of information outstanding for her to make her necessary determination. And I submit at this point that we've provided the information that she requested at that time. And if at any time during this proceeding she determines that she's heard enough and that she now has enough information that would allow her to lift the order, to in effect cancel the cease and desist order, having...
I appreciate that offer, John.
That she could do so.
Yeah, thank you.
And we wouldn't need to reach the point of a decision.
Yeah, okay.
But anticipating that...
Yeah, it's nice of you to say that.
Yep,
we're here.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
One tries to anticipate these
okay,
things,
right,
John.
Okay, right.
Now... With respect to the history of what was allowed at different times under the regulations, I've prepared notes, and I'd simply like to read into
sure.
the record the changes or requirements of the regulations that you know existed and how they changed
I guess what
over
was,
time.
What was brought up is when these changes were made, did they secure permits? You know, during that period of time, and I'm guessing they're not going to, those files are not going to be available.
Your guess is correct with regard to building permits
yeah.
and so forth. And however, what I can speak to is the what was allowed over time by the regulations in the zone and how those regulations have changed over time.
Well, John, I don't want to cut you off, but I want to ask you something. So we're arguing right now about whether or not it was a legal non-conforming use before we get to Part B. Which is, was it abandoned?
Correct.
Okay.
Although I think it's important to point out, Mr. McNeil, that there is no allegation in the cease and desist order with respect to abandonment, that abandonment did occur or a finding that it had not occurred. The only issue in the cease and desist order, as I read it, is whether or not a nonconforming use had been established or you know, whether a nonconformity resulted
from
an
earlier abandoned, but maybe the CEO sees this use and said it's not legit. So here we are, and they just didn't, because as far as they were concerned, it was over. So now it's a new use to the ZEO, and so I'm calling it abandoned because you're claiming that it was a pre-existing nonconforming condition.
I can only go by the language that has been raised in the order itself.
But again, a clean start, new tenant, use is gone, animals come in. Now there's a cease and desist because anybody puts the animals on a less than 5-acre parcel, they're going to get the same order.
I would sincerely hope that's not the case. I think Mrs. Radford did all she could using the information available to her to determine whether she had enough information to conclude that a nonconforming use existed. The nonconformity or the issue of a nonconforming, the existence of a nonconforming use is not terminated by a change of ownership or a change of tenancy, as you put it. That is a principle ensconced in the regulations, where, as I read to you earlier, that a nonconforming use shall not be terminated or deemed abandoned unless the property owner voluntarily discontinues the use and such discontinuance is accompanied by an intent not to reestablish such use. So that's going to be the question if we're going to go down the road of abandonment, whether there is any evidence of an intent to permanently discontinue and abandon the use. And if there is no such evidence, then my position, and I don't mean to get ahead of myself, my position is that the to put it informally, the issue of abandonment at that point is a non-starter.
Well, you know, the use was the animals being there, not the buildings. And I know you're connecting it and, but the animals went away. To me, and so did the owner. So, I mean, I you know, how sure. at what point does it, you know, become... You know, is it a never-ending use? I mean, does this gentleman have to write something as long as he, you know, if those buildings sat there for 20 years and somebody could do the same thing? I mean, just because it's 18 months.
That's the legal principle, that a non-conforming use...
I'm pretty familiar with abandonment, but I mean, it, you know, clearly that's...
isn't terminated simply by non-use, and that a change of ownership makes no difference whatsoever. What if a new owner bought the property with the animals?
That's why I asked for the purchase and sale agreement, to see if those animals were there and went with them.
They're not the same animals. It was a good question, but they're not the same animals. But the frankly the principles and controversies that surround nonconforming uses would be greatly simplified.
I mean, you understand. You know,
many years of decisions by our appellate courts would be nullified if the law was simply that a change of ownership terminates a nonconforming use.
Okay, so where we go from here?
So what I had started to do was to outline for you, in conformity with Attorney Carey's request, a bit of a history of how the regulations have changed over the years in respect to this property and this zone. When zoning was enacted in Montville in 1970, the, quote, keeping of domestic animals and 4-H projects was allowed as a general accessory use in all residential zones. The keeping of domestic animals and 4-H projects. Now, if there is any question that the keeping of farm animals would have met at that time the or been consistent with the use of the words domestic animals, I can address that in a little bit. But with regard to the history of these changes in uses, there was no definition in 1970 in the regulations of domestic animals. I can provide you some. I would posit that your regulations today contain a definition of farm animals that states that farm animals are domestic animals. And that if I can, I know I mentioned earlier, here it is. I took time to find a legal definition of domestic animals that was, this is from Black's Law Dictionary, the fourth edition from back in the 1950s, which is close as I could come to 1970 when the regulation was enacted. And for the record, Black's Law Dictionary, fourth edition, defined domestic animals as such are habituated to live in or about the habitations of men, or such as contribute to the support of a family or the wealth of the community. And there's some citations to legal cases that state that this term includes horses, goats, cattle, and there's several other case citations there as well. So I think that we're on solid ground in concluding that these animals, that if we refer to them generally as farm animals, would have met the definition of domestic animals in 1970. That regulation dating from 1970 was unchanged at the time Ralph Marsh came to the property, established the use. It was unchanged up until 1986, when farm animals were, a definition of farm animals was added to the regulations. They were defined as any domestic animal maintained primarily for milk or food production, including horses maintained for recreation purposes. Subsequently, that regulation of farm animals was refined a bit in 2017 to address the keeping of chickens and putting a limit on those 12 hens.
And isn't that also, you don't have to have 5 acres anymore for the chickens?
Under a certain number.
Right.
12, specifically 12 hens. Then finally, in 2021, the regulations pertaining to farm animals were amended even more restrictively to include not only what I just read, but to also say that farm animals shall be kept only on a farm as defined in Section 1.3. And again, you know, that's where the 5-acre requirement comes from. So Mr. Marsh's affidavit demonstrates that throughout the period of his ownership, he used this property in conformity with the zoning regulations. There was no acreage limit on the keeping of domestic animals or farm animals, no regulations pertaining to chickens as we have now, limitation on roosters. And he further states in his affidavit that to the extent any of these uses became nonconforming during his ownership and he discontinued such uses, that he, as he indicated, he had horses from time to time. Eventually, he tore down the riding rink. He says that he never intended to abandon the right to continue any nonconformities, to permanently relinquish, to permanently abandon that right, notwithstanding any period of discontinuance. Subsequently, Mr. Marsh moved to North Carolina, sold the property. In September of 2011, I found a deed that was recorded on that date, even though the deed itself contains no date at all, which was interesting. But we, based on the affidavit, we know it was in 2011. And Mr. Marsh and his wife sold the property to someone by the name of Roger Edwards. Our efforts to reach out to even locate Mr. Roger Edwards have been fruitless over the course of several months now. However, bear with me just a moment, please. Here we go. the statement of a prior owner, as in the case of Mr. Marsh, is not the only way that we may measure an intent to continue, a non-intention to abandon a non-conforming use, even though it may be temporarily discontinued. There are other ways one could perhaps find evidence of such an intent on the part of a property owner. For example, maybe somebody recorded an affidavit on the land records that would be revealed through a search or through some other means. Someone perhaps in a generic or general sense could provide an affidavit stating that from a certain period in time, from a certain date onward, we no longer intended to use this particular property for whatever, gas station purposes or something like that. So I searched the land records. I even made an appointment and requested an opportunity to look through all of the zoning files, such as they may be, concerning this particular property. And Mrs. Radford was gracious enough to provide those records for me to search through. I found nothing in the zoning records that were provided to me in regard to this property indicating any application for a change of use, any decision by the Planning and Zoning Commission reflective of the permanent secession measured by intention on the part of an owner to discontinue a non-conforming use that had been lawfully established or had been a use that had been in this case established and subsequently rendered non-conforming. And
can I ask you a question? So the owner, the previous owner, did they keep animals as well, or was there like
you don't know?
So that's the person you couldn't reach.
And that's the person we couldn't reach. Just don't know. In addition to searching through the zoning records, as I indicated, I also did an extensive search of the land records in respect of this property. Most of us know that land records consist of deeds, for example, and sometimes there is a reference or a statement or a restriction in a deed. The condition of this deed is that the property may no longer be used to keep animals or something like that. I certainly didn't find anything like that, and land records can consist of other types of documents, affidavits, judgments, decisions of land use commissions. I found nothing. And so in respect of that, I would like to hand in also, again, this is just to memorialize it for the record in this proceeding. I prepared an affidavit myself stating what I did, my background in respect to conducting such research, and what I found, which is in this case, nothing. So now I think I can fairly say, John, that to conclude, we have...
What did you say?
You might not hear that frequently or that early in a proceeding, okay, John, okay. But I'm doing my best for you. I appreciate more than 3 minutes.
Not a problem.
Again, we've provided all of the information that the zoning enforcement officer had indicated to me was outstanding for her purposes in determining whether a non-conforming use was established. And she limited that to the kinds of animals and the numbers of animals. Mr. Marsh said at any one time he had 90 animals, I think. And quite frankly, having met the standard that the zoning enforcement officer imposed on us, it would be fundamentally unfair, I would posit, for this commission to read into her requirement something further, something more. I believe we've satisfied her criteria. We've given her everything she asked for, on which basis she would be able to make a decision. She did not say and another thing, or she did not subsequently contact me and say, we also need this, that, or something else. But then in respect to this appeal, our burden is to show that a use was established, and in this case, the keeping of all manner of farm animals was established on this property by Mr. Marsh. There can be no question of that under the evidence, which is his affidavit, and even earlier, before we even introduced the evidence, Mr. Chairman, you indicated that you were satisfied that animals had been kept there in the past. Perhaps you had driven by or saw them or something, and that's fine. There was nothing in the cease and desist order accusing Mr. or finding that my client, Mr. DeMauro, was keeping animals in the on the property despite an abandonment of a nonconforming use having taken place, being measured by whatever evidence Mrs. Radford could hypothetically have found. We here have gone further. We conducted, as I said, an extensive search of the records that were available to us, her own zoning records, the land records, where things like not only deed restrictions, but judgments and commission decisions and so forth, as I said, might be recorded. And we found nothing indicating any intent to not reestablish such use on the part of Mr. Edwards, the intervening owner. And the regulations, 4.9.4 of the Montville zoning regulations, which I believe fairly comply with the decisional laws, with the decisional law, rather, that the courts have handed down for years, is that in order for abandonment of a nonconforming use to be found, a voluntary relinquishment or voluntary discontinuance of the use must be accompanied by an intent not to reestablish. Without any evidence of an intent not to reestablish, we've met our burden. We can't prove a negative. And perhaps Mrs. Radford, in response, will indicate that she's talked to Mr. Edwards. She was able to contact him, that she found that he had, in fact, intended to discontinue such uses. Perhaps she has an affidavit to that effect or something from the land records that I missed.
We're talking about the last owner now, right? The guy in
yes.
the middle, the person in the middle.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
And we're talking about in 2011, that person sold it to, he owned it rather for that period of time, but we don't know if he kept animals. And we're
That's
trying
right.
to find that out.
We don't know. What we do know is that, you have that photograph in front of you from.
That's what I'm talking about, that period.
1 second. You have in front of you the photograph that was attached to Mr. Marsh's affidavit, and so I'm going to, if I can find that myself here, here it is. Here's the same photograph that you have, and I'm going to ask my client, Mr. DeMauro, to step up here to the microphone for just a second. Mr. DeMauro, building in the center of the photograph, is that the barn that exists today?
Yeah, that's the barn, same building.
And this sort of structure consisting of fence posts just to the left of the barn, is that structure of posts still
yes.
exists today?
Yes.
And what is that structure?
Yes, it's just an aviary for the for chickens, and that's just a bunch of beams and posts and
chicken
posts
and
yeah.
And that's the structure that's referred to by Mr. Marsh in his affidavit also. The riding rink mentioned by Mr. Marsh is no longer there. And in general, sir, does the property resemble today the appearance it had in the photograph from 1987?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the same.
And... I guess I should ask this question. Mr. DeMauro, approximately how many animals do you have today?
Counting into each individual chicken, maybe like 30. We only have a couple goats, couple sheep. One sheep. It's not that many.
Do you agree
Good pets.
Do you agree that the types of animals remain those that were mentioned in Mrs. Radford's order?
Yeah.
You have nothing like the 90 animals that were kept by Ralph Marsh.
No, I wouldn't intend to.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. DeMauro. I think I've presented all the evidence that I intend to, and I would posit all the evidence that I need to. The use of the property for the keeping of these animals was lawfully established under the regulations as they then existed by Ralph Marsh. He had no intention to discontinue any of those uses, even though he may have discontinued some from time to time during his ownership. During the subsequent period of ownership by Roger Edwards, there is no evidence, despite a reasonably exhaustive search, of any evidence of intention on his part that these uses, which were by that time in abeyance, shall we say, or temporarily discontinued, were the subject of an intention on his part to permanently discontinue them. Mr.
I'm sorry, I should have asked you to state your name and stuff when you get.
Sorry,
that's
I'm
all right.
DeMauro.
It's,
I'm Thomas,
you know.
DeMauro.
Yeah. And I think what Mr. DeMauro has indicated is the structures, the animal coop, animal enclosure, barn, and so forth, fences remain approximately the same today.
We haven't built anything. Everything was there, the gates, the barbed wire, the barns, everything was there for us.
And Mr. DeMauro, this may go without saying, but yeah. it is not. I take it is not your intention to discontinue any non-conforming uses permanently that you now enjoy as the owner of this property.
No, yeah, and it's important to our household. We enjoy it. It's important for us mentally, physically. It helps us.
Okay.
There's some people that benefit from it.
Well, it's good to know that you derive these benefits. Those benefits, those uses are consistent again with the uses when they were established. The regulations at the time providing for recreational purposes, household purposes, and so forth.
We're not making any money doing anything there.
Folks, that's really all I have here. And
well, you'll probably get up again if you hear something.
I may.
Disappointing me, John.
I would.
It's only 50 minutes.
Well, we'll
you're losing your curveball or whatever they call it.
We'll see what the contrary evidence may be and reserve further comment as necessary.
Yeah, well, okay. Thank you, Attorney Chase. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak in favor of this application at this time? Is there anyone else like to speak in favor? One last time. Is anyone else like to speak in favor? Hearing none. Is there anyone who'd like to speak in opposition?
I'm going to try to keep it less than 50 minutes, if that's okay with you folks.
I'll be disappointed.
My name is Attorney Matthew Willis. I represent Stacy Radford, who is your zoning enforcement officer. And I want to go over a few things. First of all, what this is about, and that is basically a cease and desist order that was issued because Ms. Radford noticed that there were chicken, ducks, goats, sheep, potbelly pigs on the property. It's 5 acres to be a farm. There's certain animals that are allowed. 12 chickens are allowed in this zone, along with the rabbit is considered a pet. Hopefully they don't breed too much. Roosters are not allowed. She responded to a complaint. She went out there, met with the property owner, saw these animals, and you've heard the appellant provide you information regarding their interpretation of the regulations and things of that nature. What I'd like to start, I'm going to go back in time to 1970. That's where I'm going to start because that's when your zoning regulations started. So 1970 in the RA 120 zone, the keeping, breeding, raising of cattle, including dairy, sheep, chicken, goats, and horses, and rental of horses on lots of 5 acres or more were permitted as of right. So we haven't gone back to 1970. There's no evidence for that, that indeed this predated the zoning regulations. That's number one. Number two, we have the missing landowner, and the Marshes owned it starting in the 70s based on a testimony. We have the missing property owner, Mr. Edwards. There's no evidence they had animals there. And it's not our responsibility to create intent. We're just looking at the way things are now and what's happened. There's, for a non-conforming use, first it has to be legal. There's no evidence that this was legal in 1970, number one. Number two, there's no evidence that it's been continuous. And so those are requirements that you have to meet in order to overturn Stacy's cease and desist order. And there may have been animals there at one point in time. They haven't been legal whenever they were there. So Stacy went out and did her job, and here we are. Now you have definitions of farm animals and other things in your regulations, which I'm sure you're aware of. So she did her job, and she did confer with the property owner, as you realize, and her lawyer, you know, saying, what's going on? Do you have this chain of a legal non-conforming use? And that just hasn't been established. And I don't know, Stacy, if you want to come up and just describe what you saw and things of that nature, anything else I might have missed, because we didn't know. The appeal form itself just said appeal, so we didn't know the basis of the appeal. But now that I've heard Attorney Chase, I have an idea of what it is. Go ahead, Stacy.
Stacy Radford, Zoning and Wetlands Officer, for the record. So I think it's pretty clear in the December 5th inspection report the magnitude of animals which the property owners are keeping there. I took pictures of a rabbit, 30 plus chickens, 4 plus roosters, 6 plus ducks, 2 potbelly pigs, 3 goats, 4 sheep. It's my understanding that those animals would be kept on a farm, with the exception of the rabbit and 12 chickens. Roosters are not allowed at all in our regulations. I'd also like
unless
to point.
Unless it's a true farm, 5 acres or more.
Nope, we do not
even
allow.
If you have more than 5 acres, you can't have
we
a rooster.
We do not allow roosters in the town of Moffitt.
Even if you got 100 acres?
We do not allow roosters.
Okay.
I'd like to also point out that I did go to the building department, because not only did I look at what zoning had for open permits for the property, I also went to the building department, and there were no permits pulled for any such barn-like structures on the property. I also went and met with the tax assessor, and the tax assessor had no proof that any of these animals ever existed on the property. We went all the way back to 1977 when Earl and Dorothy Smith owned the property. So I have been unable to determine that these animals legally existed on this property.
Thank you.
Let's let him finish. Let's let him finish.
Thanks. And what I'm going to do, and I don't have copies because I apologize, I didn't think this would come up, but I'm going to submit a copy of the 1970 regulations into the record. I think he has them. Yeah, you have that. So he has it. I'm going to sign it. Mike, are you taking the...
Right there, that'll be an exhibit.
And the other item I'd like to just make a comment on is, unfortunately, we just got an affidavit from the person who owned it in the middle of when Mr. Edwards owned it in 1970. We don't have testimony prior to 1970, nor do we have any evidence regarding that. But I'm going to let, I may reserve a last comment, but I'm going to let Attorney Chase, you know, I know you had a question or a comment.
Before you ask him, can I ask you something, just a clarification based on what Attorney Chase said?
Sure.
And that was, so what you're saying is since the cease and desist didn't specifically say abandon of a non-conforming use, that what you're saying, it hasn't been established that it was a non-conforming, legal non-conforming use.
Yes.
That's just, not in here. That's
no, it wouldn't necessarily be in there okay. unless we knew it was a legal,
all right.
pre-existing legal non-conforming use.
Right. Okay.
And so you don't get into abandonment. That's going to be up to the property owner to say, yes, it was continuous, it was legal, and here we are. We still have it. We never gave it up. And we just don't have that here. I mean, it's just the way it is. I'm sorry, John, did you want to go forward?
What I had was some questions I'd like to ask Mrs. Radford by way of cross-examination.
I'm not sure if that's appropriate, is it?
Well, if he asks it through the chair, that's fine with me.
Okay, well, I'll try to conform to that then, Matt, and if I slip, please remind me. Mr. Chair, I would like or would request that you ask several questions of Mrs. Radford as follows. She mentioned that she consulted with the tax assessor regarding the keeping of animals on the property. I really don't know, but I'm inferring from that she would have been satisfied with evidence of taxes being paid on sheep or goats. So I wonder if
I think maybe it could have been like maybe people get certain benefits because it's a farm, maybe, you know, because it's a reduction.
I think you're referring to a public act 490 tax exemption.
Okay.
I don't know that that's been raised as an issue here by anyone.
Okay.
As far as we know, there is no exemption here for farm.
No, and no one's claiming that there is. But if the keeping of animals, if evidence for the keeping of animals was being sought from the tax assessor, I'm frankly a bit bemused or confused as to how a person is ordinarily taxed on a goat or a chicken. And so I would ask respectfully through the chair that Mrs. Radford explain her understanding of the taxation of animals.
Or why she inquired about
that. Well, also why she inquired and if in fact it was based on or if her conclusion was that there was an absence of evidence of animals being taxed, the next question would be is there any basis in the town of Montville or frankly the state of Connecticut for the taxing by the municipal authority of goats, chickens, or what have you. That is one question. If you'd like to,
sure, let me ask.
If you'd like us to do this one at a time, as opposed to a list, I think.
Chairman, if I might,
sure.
Your counsel.
Yes.
I think you mentioned that there was no
even sure that's why she was there. Well, unless we ask her, but you know.
Maybe she can answer it in a word or two.
Okay. Can you just answer in a couple of why did you go to the tax assessor?
I went to find out if there were any taxes either levied against the property owners or any list of credit to any property owners that the property was once considered a farm, and or if they had taxed any horses. I didn't specifically ask for chickens. I asked if any animals were being taxed on the property.
Okay, this is your answer, Attorney Chase.
Now I think I'm going to use Attorney Carey's word, irrelevant. There is no evidence before this board, no legal authority presented before this board that any evidence or lack of evidence found in the tax assessor or collector's records in respect to animals has any bearing on this situation, what have you, whatsoever. I am unfamiliar with any municipal authority to tax animals such as goats, chickens, okay, well, what have you.
And horses can be taxed, number one. And number two, Public Act 490 was created prior to 1970. So she was doing her due diligence. That's all.
No one is faulding her due diligence.
Well,
not at all.
All right, I'm going to ask a little bit of order here. So yeah. If you could finish, John.
Sure.
You had a. I mean, I'm not sure if.
One more to direct to Mrs. Radford through you, Mr. Chair, in respect also both to her comment, to Mrs. Radford's comments about inquiring at the building department, and furthermore in respect to the tax assessor. I believe, and I. Gloria would, you know, Gloria's notes I know would be dispositive of this, but I believe I heard Mrs. Radford testify generally that there was no evidence that she was able to uncover through these other departments or these various departments concerning the structures on the property. And I have here, I didn't make copies, I can submit what I have, but I have the current assessor's street card for the property for 836 Route 163. And it indicates that the structure, the outbuildings, including the barn that her reports includes photographs of, and that was mentioned in one of the affidavits, that barn was built in 1937. And so while we don't know anything about animals that were kept in it in 1937 or during that time period, but I would posit that the erection of that structure at a time well before there were any zoning regulations in Montville, which were established in 1970.
Could the parcel have been larger too by that time? Could it have been subdivided?
There is no evidence that the use of the property as, you know, that I found in the land records, that the use of the property as a standalone residential parcel included more acreage, greater acreage at any time. And finally, this is not directly in response to Mrs. Radford's testimony, but rather in rebuttal of Mr. Willis's argument in reference to the 1970 zoning regulations.
I believe Mr. Chase will have the chance to make rebuttal after Mr.
Sure, I guess we can.
I'm prepared to proceed as formally or as informally as you wish.
Yeah, he can proceed right now. I have no objection to that. Go ahead.
That's okay. Yeah, okay.
If I have something to say, I will.
And then we'll let you up again.
Exactly.
I kept my promise to keep it less than 50 minutes. Yeah, so okay.
That's fine. Okay. Mr. Willis pointed out at the beginning of his presentation that we can't go back to 1970, and or we're not going back to 1970. And I think, Matt, correct me if I'm my understanding of your argument was wrong. I think you were pointing out that that nothing we had said here tonight, that I had said here tonight, established that the uses predated the zoning regulations in 1970 that were established in 1970. I don't have to. My burden under the regulations in question, under your own zoning regulations, and frankly under the statutory authority, is that a nonconforming one is a use is one which predates the establishment of zoning regulations or any amendment thereof. So what we're saying is that the uses that took place during the time of, certainly during the earliest part of the time, perhaps the entirety of Mr. Marsh's ownership, were entirely lawful. I provided for you the dates of the amendment of the regulations to a more restrictive stance toward the keeping of animals, ultimately culminating in recent years with an acreage requirement that certainly didn't exist earlier on. Mr. Willis referred you, however, to the 1970 regulations and gave you a copy, I think. I am looking at something called Table of General Use Regulations, Section 3.11. Mr. Willis pointed out that in the RA-120 district, the permitted uses or uses permitted by right, as the chart heading says, included the keeping, breeding, raising of cattle, sheep, chicken, goats, and horses, and rental of horses on lots of 5 acres or more. That is not the use to which the property was put during that time period. It couldn't have been. That could only have been done on 5 acres or more. Rather, if you look over in column 4 of that table of uses of the 1970 regulations, again, which existed for many years thereafter until subsequent amendment, the general accessory uses heading goes down at item 3 to say that the keeping of domestic animals and 4-H projects is an allowed accessory use in this residential zone, or was under the regulations as they then existed and did for many years. I've presented to you a standard, I would posit, or legally supported definition of domestic animals to include the types of animals at issue here out of the resources of Black's Law Dictionary. I would even note that today your regulations, and I have them, I think, over here.
This is old. It says accommodation for servants.
I'm missing Jeopardy.
Maybe that's when Michael Jordan was buying his house.
Yeah. Here we are. I pointed out that your regulations, as they exist now, treat farm animals and domestic animals, those phrases essentially synonymously. Your regulations today in defining farm animals say any domestic animal that is owned or used or raised for the production of milk, food, or used or housed for recreation or exhibition or commerce even. And that includes, you know, the various types of animals which are consistent with what's on the property today. So I think it's a respectfully that Mr. Willis's reliance on the table of allowed uses or the column of allowed uses, permitted uses in the 1970 regulations is the wrong source to which to look. And rather, column 4 accessory uses demonstrate that the use of the property at all times up until what, about 1987 or so, I think I said, or longer, when the regulation was changed, that the keeping of domestic animals, which we've just discussed, including which include such things as farm animals, and 4-H projects. That's pretty damning, I would say, with respect to what types of animals are being referenced. That those uses were allowed as accessory uses under the 1970 regulations. And under those 1970 regulations, Mr. Fargo established these uses, as his affidavit sets forth. Those uses, once established, were not ceased, were not abandoned, or rather there's no evidence of such. And with regard, finally, and I knew I was trying to think of the last point that Mr. Willis had raised that caused me to make some marks with my pens. He mentioned the word continuity, but your own regulations contain no such requirement in respect to nonconforming uses. In fact, they say just the opposite, and I'll repeat again, that a nonconforming use shall not be terminated or deemed abandoned unless the property owner of such use voluntarily discontinues such use, and such discontinuance is accompanied by an intent not to reestablish such use. So you can have discontinuance for a period of time of really indeterminate length. But unless it's accompanied by evidence of an intention to abandon, the nonconforming use continues. There's simply no requirement in that regulation for continuity, as Mr. Willis has tried to argue. That's section 4.9.4 of the Montville Zoning Regulations. Thanks. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to.
Thank you, John.
I don't have it. I think we're all done. So unless Stacy has something, I guess.
Yes, I just wanted to point out on the property cards for the parcel, what they actually speak of is a single-family home, which was built in 1936, a detached garage bearing the size of 20 by 18, built in 1936, a framed utility shed, the size 16 by 8, built in 1995, and there is also a 20 by 18 cottage, which was built in 1952. Nowhere in there is there any indication of a barn.
Thank you.
Just briefly, I think you can turn to the inspection report prepared by Mrs. Radford that's part of your materials tonight. There are numerous pictures of the barn structure. Mr. Marsh's affidavit describes it with a hay door or a hay loft. You can see indication of that in her photos. I guess the only other question I would ask, and I'm going to leave it hanging rhetorically, that if this barn is not synonymous with the garage built in 1936, then where, you know, in the photographs is the garage?
So again, looking back at the land records and what pictures which were taken by the assessor's office when they went out, and I can submit this. It's hard to see, but there is actually on that detached garage barn, as Mr. Chase is referring to, Attorney Chase, I'm sorry, is referring to, there's an actual garage door on that building. Now there are barn-style doors, sliding doors. However, this picture on the assessor's records, if you pull up the GIS now, you can see a picture of the house, and that picture shows a garage door physically on the building that Attorney Chase is referring to as a barn.
Yeah, that should be an exhibit.
You have all the assessor's cards.
I do not. I have a current card.
Sure, absolutely. It is hard to see, however, if you were to pull it up on the GIS, okay. You can physically see this.
No objection to the exhibit, except that I think for purposes of your review here tonight, you have to take the photograph as it exists, not Mrs. Radford's words as to what is shown on GIS.
That's an exhibit. Yep.
And I have a very tiny, about quarter inch square portion of the barn building showing here, and maybe my eyesight's not as good as others.
We'll make it an exhibit.
I would frankly posit, and not to, if I can trying to save some time for everyone. We do not believe that the existence of different types of doors, sliding or overhead or bifold or whatever, might have been the case, has anything to do with the nature of the structure. Mr. Chair, I'm not asking you to introduce evidence on your own part, but I personally know that you have a great deal of familiarity with the building.
I'm getting confused. I don't know how you would know personally something. If he doesn't have a conflict, I'm a little confused. I just want to make sure that he testifies for the record that he's seen things, that's all.
Well, I am not, and I think...
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe...
Can we just answer
fact questions from a party to a proceeding like this?
Look, all right.
I withdraw the comment.
Okay.
To simplify things, and to sort of focus what's become a bit of a free for all here. The evidence is the evidence. Mrs. Radford is presenting some evidence. We have no objection to the assessor's cards coming in. We've presented the evidence that we've presented, and we look forward to your decision and whatever steps subsequently anyone might choose to pursue. Thank you very much for your
time. Thank you, Attorney Chase.
Thank you. Nothing
further. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, technically, I suppose there could be someone in the audience who wants to speak.
Yep. I'm just going to make one comment. I'm going to withdraw my statement that I said that I knew it was pre-existing nonconforming. I wasn't aware of the evidence that was submitted as about whether that it was in question. I just remembered a long time ago when I was younger that, you know, something was going on there, but that's a long time ago. But, okay, is there anyone else who'd like to speak in, I'm going to say, in favor or in opposition or give a general comment that's here?
What was the property before 1936?
No idea. Who owned the property before 36? Do we know that? Sometimes on the street card it doesn't say, right? You have to do a search. Yeah.
I have that on the street cards.
Right.
The street cards, as I think everyone would generally agree, show typically a notation of transfers or conveyances going back through several iterations, perhaps a previous owner or the next owner prior to that. As far as any research into the land records as to who the owner was prior to 1936, that was long before the enactment of zoning regulations, and therefore of no relevance that I can see to a determination concerning the nonconformity of any use.
Okay. Since there's nobody that has any more comments to make, I'm going to ask our attorney, do you think it'd be appropriate to close this hearing, or should we leave it open for you to give an opinion to us or to help us with a decision? Do you think we have enough information here to render a decision tonight?
I think the parties have offered you all the evidence they intend to offer. Neither one has indicated they need more time to rebut, respond, or anything like that. So I think that you're in a position to close the hearing at this point. And if you need any legal advice from me, you can do that outside the hearing.
Respect to the closing of the hearing, I'd point out so that it doesn't escape any of us that the public hearing was opened.
It was
last
continued
month
and was based continued on your request. Yes.
So that there would be the availability certainly of time to continue further.
Yeah.
However, I intend to present no further evidence except in rebuttal to anything that would be further presented.
Thank you.
I think what you said is you're either on the last day or the second to last day to complete this hearing without getting an extension from the appellant. So in that respect, you really don't have a lot of choice.
Right. How do the rest of the members feel about closing this hearing out?
I say yes. Close it up.
Obviously, then our discussion will ensue, and we'll decide if we don't have to make a decision tonight.
I don't know. I've been back in that area, and there's plenty of room to say that prior to 1936, that was a farm.
Yeah, that's a discussion we can have after we close the public hearing.
Okay, close the public hearing.
Okay, you guys good to close it?
Yeah, I was going to say something, but we don't have to do it at this point, so.
I make a motion to close public hearing 26 ZBA 1. The owners are Thomas DeMauro and Stacy Roblinski. Applicant Thomas DeMauro for appeal of January 13th, 2026, cease and desist letter of the zoning enforcement officer regarding property located at 836 Route 163, parcel ID 037022000. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and second. And discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of closing the public hearing, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Okay, now discussion of ZBA 26 ZBA 1, owners Thomas DeMauro and Stacy Roblinski, applicant Thomas DeMauro for appeal of January 13th, 2026, cease and desist letter of the zoning enforcement officer regarding the property located at 836 Route 163, parcel ID 037022000. Okay, to get the discussion going, we got to have a motion here. So I'm going to make a motion to deny the request to overturn the CEO's decision. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made second. Now we can have our discussion. So your reason why you asked that prior is because if there was a farm there for a long time.
A long time, yeah. So,
Mr. Chairman, that's the sort of thing, really.
What's that?
If Mr. Butterworth is going to be introducing new evidence, that can't be done, though.
Okay, we can only discuss what came up.
You can only discuss what's in the record.
Well, it's too late for my discussion that I brought up earlier, isn't it?
So, as the representative of the CEO, that's you, right?
You're Willis is the representative of the ZBA.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're our CEO now, right? You're representing the town, are you not?
I'm representing you, the ZBA.
Right, the town. Can you give an opinion on the cease and desist? Based on the evidence that you've heard, so you can enlighten us or no?
I don't think it would be appropriate for any lawyer representing the board to give an opinion as to what
as far
decision
as
it
the,
should make. I
the
mean,
regulations, how they were enforced.
If you're asking me about the arguments the appellant made about the elements, the contents of the cease and desist order, that she didn't say this or didn't say that, I didn't think those arguments had any merit, regardless of what the cease and desist order said. All the cease and desist order has to say is there's a violation of the following zoning regulations on this property, period. Comply within 30 days or there'll be consequences. It's not a legal brief. It's not a complaint that's filed in court. And so I don't think the commission, the board, has to really give any consideration to the arguments that the appellant only had to respond to certain things because other things weren't contained in the cease and desist. The cease and desist would have been 5 pages long if she had to recite the regulations about non-conforming uses and so on. Also, as Attorney Willis pointed out, the appeal paper itself doesn't say anything about what the grounds of the appeal were. So, Ms. Radford and her counsel didn't know what the appeal was going to be based on until they heard appellant's counsel tonight. So I just don't think you should be terribly concerned or concerned at all about what the contents of what the cease and desist order were. They seem pretty clear to me. Some discussion could be had at some point about one of the cease and desist orders not having been appealed from. I think that's best left for another time. The consequences of that are. But if you want, I shouldn't volunteer. if you want some general information about who has the burden of proof on issues like abandonment, whether the uses were legal at the time they started, and frankly, if they started after you had zoning regulations, unless the uses were permitted by the zoning regulations, expressly permitted, either by permit or special permit, they're not allowed. So they weren't legal if they were not permitted in the regs when they started. I don't know. Well, I shouldn't guide the discussion. I can give some guide, I shouldn't guide the discussion in terms of what the facts were, what I thought the facts were, because,
right.
again, I'm not on the board, and my opinion on those things or my perception doesn't matter. It's the board's task to do that. But if you have questions as you go along in terms of what the burden of proof is.
I guess I can ask you questions then. And since there's a lapse of the previous owner, it couldn't be, we couldn't prove whether or not it was, we couldn't prove that it was a legal non-conforming use. We also had no evidence of the last owner that had it over 10 years, whether or not they had. And so would that constitute an abandonment or, you know?
Well, it's up for you to find. I think it is something you have to consider that, unless I misheard, Mr. Marsh, the gentleman from North Carolina who gave the affidavit, indicated that he left here in 2011. I didn't hear any evidence about the use post-2011 prior to Mr. DeMauro coming in 2025. It's 15 years. I don't think that the zoning officer had the obligation to find a declaration somewhere by a previous owner that they didn't mean that if the use had been stopped, that they didn't mean for it to be permanent. I don't think that that's what that means when it says when the statute and the your regulations say that there has to be evidence of intention to abandon. I think, and I could be wrong, and we'll probably find out at some point. But I think that evidence of intent can still be proved by circumstantial evidence. And if somebody stops doing something for a long time, if they move to North Carolina and take their animals with them, now there's a question whether they intended to continue that use at the site in Montrose, it seems to me. And I don't think that Mr. Marsh or one of his successors had to write a letter or a note or put something on the land record saying, I hereby am terminating my nonconforming use. I intend never to have it. It's my intent to abandon it permanently. I don't think that's what the law requires.
I don't think he cared one way or the other.
I just don't think that's what the law requires in order to terminate a nonconforming use for non-use or abandonment. Now, there used to be, several years ago, before the legislature got involved in changing the statutes and the towns changed their regs about nonconforming uses, there used to be regs, municipal regulations that would say something like, if a use is stopped for 1 year, that's deemed to be abandoned. That's all illegal now. But I don't think you have to have like a dying declaration from a previous owner that, oh yeah, I meant to stop. I mean, examples involve, including old gas stations, for example. The previous owners would leave some of the tanks in the ground or something as evidence of intent not to abandon. They would leave the lifts in the garage sometimes as evidence of intent not to abandon. Here, again, it's not my job to find the facts, but unless I totally misheard, there was no evidence of what happened at this property from 2011 till 2025. And very sketchy evidence what happened prior to Mrs. Marsh, and I guess sort of like in 1970.
If that property was a farm before that, would that have any weight?
Farm?
No, if as Mr. Butterworth mentioned, if it was
in 1936
or prior, or 20 or whatever.
I don't think so. Probably every place in this town was a farm.
I was going to say all of Montville was a farm.
No, I don't think so.
Well, at some point it was subdivided. It was split up. I don't know why.
It probably wasn't subdivided because these lots. It sounds as if this lot came into its current configuration a long time ago. Prior to subdivision rights, so, and I don't know what the minimum lot size is in this zone. Whether this could even
it's a 120,
been,
right?
Whether this could even be cut out?
I think
yeah,
it's a
too
3-acre
small.
Zone.
It's too. This lot's too small. So, I think it's 2-something acres. But at any rate, I didn't mean to talk this much, but I think, in terms of whether this was abandoned, whether it was illegal non-conforming use, I think. You need to look at whether the use, whatever it was legal at the time they claim it started. Subsequently became illegal by the enactment of a reg that made it illegal. Was there abandonment at some point in time? You have all sorts of evidence to consider and analyze on those issues, on the issue of abandonment especially, termination of the use, and whether it terminated at a period of time between 2011 at least and 2025. Also, I have something else. I don't know why I make, as Mr. Chase said, I don't know why I make notes to myself because then I can't find them anyways. There was something else. It'll come back if we stay here long enough.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions?
If you'd like, I mean, I don't know if you want to kick this over and if you want to give me some guidance, I could try to write a motion for you for the next meeting, but I don't know. It's up to you.
Well, as was pointed out, you know, we got to be careful about, you know, carrying over and...
No, the hearing is done. The hearing's over. You
we
now
have
65
days now to make a decision.
Yeah.
Right. What's your guys' pleasure? What do you think? You want? You got any questions for?
I do have one question.
I do.
I think we all do. The same thing. Is it a legal non-conforming lot?
Lot? You mean you? You mean use?
For use. Was it a legal use or back? And they just did it. Never got caught.
You know, there's a lot of people going by that property. As far as I'm concerned, seeing this for years, seeing animals there, especially horses. My biggest thing is, you know, we're here about the size of the property and how many animals, correct? Yes or no? Am I off back?
Well,
because it seems like roosters are illegal. We know that. If Mr. DeMauro said, I'm going to get rid of the risto, the flock of hens, you can't have more than 12. Fact. Tell me if I'm wrong, please. Say that.
Well,
you know, what is he going to do in terms of getting rid of some of these animals to reduce the size of it? Or is it going to continue to raise more? A pot-belly pig, people have them, believe it or not, for a pet. You know what I mean? A sheep could be a pet. A goat can be pets. That's a fact. If you're going to have a herd now we have a problem.
What they're saying, Art, is...
So, that's, well, again, I want to lay more terms. Okay, I don't want it. You know, these lawyers are very good.
Just so you know that... Those limitations that you're talking about,
right?
Those are legal limitations, and
right?
But if you had a legal non-conforming, you can have all this stuff. You don't have to get rid of your roosters. You don't have to have just a dozen chickens. You can, I mean, if they actually established that they had a legal non-conforming use, they could keep all that stuff.
That was my layman's question. I had a right to say that because I wanted to know this. It was not brought up. I know it was brought up there. When I'm reading all this and seeing this, it's the amount of what's legal and illegal. So that's why I wanted to ask that question directly in a layman's form. And what was out of these animals? Who started the cease and desist because they were grown? There was more than 12 hens. There were ducks. You know what I mean? How many ducks? You know what I mean? In the yard. You know, did you clip?
Roosters.
You clip the feathers. You know, I had marlins coming to my yard. I only have a half acre. You know,
it all goes back to
that's what I want to know.
Justifies everything. Is it a legal non-conforming?
Yeah, I understand
lot?
That. But
if it was not legal.
Yeah.
Right.
And did you get rid of this whole mess?
Yeah, not a legal conforming lot. The use. We know the lot is too small.
There's just that, like I said, definitely the roosters.
Was it illegal?
Right. If they had five acres, we wouldn't be here. It's not the rooster.
Was it legal conforming back in the day?
I understand that.
There's a difference of opinion. Obviously, the applicant says it was, you know, it was legal because the use was pre-existing and non-conforming. And the zoning enforcement officer can't find evidence that it was. Here we are.
I have a question. Is our decision based on just what you just said about the legal non-conforming, or is the intent of the owners, should that play in our decision, or are we just looking at black and white on paper?
We're looking at whether or not the zoning enforcement officer legally enforce our regulations by issuing a cease and desist. The intent of the property owner, you know, it doesn't really play a part here, right? Obviously, the intent is obvious.
Well, I'm just thinking when they bought it 18 months ago, this could have all been avoided if they had either asked their agent or their closing attorney, I'm going to have a farm. Can I have these animals? Right. And did they intend to have them? But
they should have done their due diligence. But they may have, on the other hand, and they thought that they were entitled to. And all things considered, it's my opinion, or based on what we've heard, that there's no evidence before they owned it after the last, you know, that 10-15 year period, it's less than 15 year period, that use was continuing during that period. It looks, you know, it seems like it reestablished 18 months ago or some period when they decided to bring those animals back. And then, you know, so that's, you know, that's where we're at right now. The town says, or the zoning enforcement officer says, I don't see where this was established. So it was illegal. So it was not a legal, it was not a conforming, legal non-conforming use. So that's where we're at. So our representative can draft us a motion if we want. We can, in either way, we can come back unless you feel strong enough to, or you can continue to ask questions.
I am going to ask a question. Is there anything in the law that states anywhere that if something is abandoned, so I get into a dispute here, that anything prior is null and void?
Run that by me again.
In other words, 15 years has elapsed.
Before this owner?
Correct.
I think what you're saying is there a period like Attorney Carey mentioned, it used to be 1 year, it was considered abandoned if you discontinued that use, and you're asking, is there a period of time? Because that would be the answer right now.
Correct.
But we don't. The answer is that's not. We don't have that. Correct, Mike.
Pardon me.
We don't have that answer.
There's no. I don't know. He was just asking. You mentioned a year, then the abandonment went away, but that goes away. But you.
That was. The legislature's been amending.
I know the years gone, but he was just asking again.
When change was made to make it more specific in the statute.
That's a good question.
That the regulator. It was
within
the last 5 or 6 years, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, no.
Willis and Mr. Chase would know.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we've been told several times that, you know, it has to be an intentional abandonment. That's where it comes down to. There's no statutory period of time.
That was my question.
Right. It's got to be an intentional abandonment. And, this gentleman that moved away that had these animals, he moved away and he took his animals with him, and he intended to take them. But the property was used by him for this use. So, you know, one could say he intentionally abandoned it because he left. And on the other hand, it's like, well, that's not really how it works. It's, you know, there's two different schools of thought, but I think that the CEO saw what she saw, applied the regulations, and in my opinion, she made the correct observation based on the lack of evidence, you know, of a legal non-conforming use. And obviously Attorney Chase is saying it was, and this is going to, if this gets turned down, we won't be the ones deciding it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I might make a suggestion, you might consider reframing the motion to move to reverse the order of the zoning officer. The reason being that...
To reverse it.
The reason being that the statutes all talk about needing four affirmative votes.
Yeah,
in order. It would make it be more easy for somebody else looking at this after.
You're right. To deny it is actually approving it. Right. Because if we deny...
I think it would be clearer if you move to reverse, and then if it doesn't get four votes, then it fails.
Right.
As opposed to having a motion to deny, and then you have to sort of translate the votes in favor of that. So
all right, I would like to amend my motion to state that I would like to deny the...
No, I think you want to do a motion to reverse...
To reverse the zoning enforcement
officer's... The zoning enforcement officer's cease and desist order.
To reverse the zoning enforcement cease and desist. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and second. We're back to discussion.
I have one.
You get that?
Question. We questioned what was happened to that land prior to 1983 before Mr. Marsh had it. Well, it belonged to his mother.
That's in the record.
Yeah. So what did she do on that property? Mr. Marsh would have knowledge of that. So we're questioning whether or not he was nonconforming in the 80s. So if she had that since the 50s, that house, or her family had it since 1936, what was it used? What did they use it for?
At this point, since the public hearing is closed, we can't take any of that, any more information, right, Mike? We can't do any more investigation, and our decision has to be rendered based on the information before us.
Correct.
Okay.
That's a good
question. You can't even receive new information, evidence from me.
Right, we can get legal advice.
I could.
Okay. I think you'll also need to, I withdraw that.
Okay.
You need to give some sense as to why you vote, whichever way you vote. And each one of you can do that, I think, when the roll call is taken.
Does everybody feel strong enough to render a decision tonight? Or would you rather have a motion drafted by counsel, and once it's drafted, we can either vote in favor or against it, and at that time we can state our opinions, or our, unless you think we put it to bed tonight.
Now, him render
can't put it
decision,
bed,
right? Him come up with what he comes up with, and then we can talk about it. Doesn't mean we have to agree with it.
Okay. What do you feel about that? How do you like that? Let Attorney Carey come up with a motion. And then we'll read it, and then we'll have another discussion, and go from there. What do you think?
You know what I just said? This big thread of Bruce's home for the guy. No, I'm sorry. Okay.
So, anyway.
You tell me.
Okay, well, I'll make a motion to continue this discussion on the decision on 26 ZBA. To give Attorney Carey an opportunity to draft a motion for our next hearing. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Any old business other than the Christmas party? No? Okay. I make a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Excuse me. Oh. We still have new business.
New business.
I got the wrong paper here. Oh, great. Are we going to have another one of these? Okay. New business, 26 ZBA-2, owner Drive-In. Oh, Drive-In LLC, applicant Sammy P. Inc. for a location approval of Connecticut DMV recycler license at 1080 Route 32, Uncasville, Connecticut, parcel ID 086-004-000. We're going to have to schedule a public hearing.
Correct. There's a motion in your packet to just receive today's application and schedule the public.
You weren't here to tell us about this packet, you know.
It's on your agenda.
Yeah, I know. No, I'm just saying, it's like, we missed you.
Well, I see the application, but I don't see a motion. I mean,
it's the first page with the application. You want mine?
Yes.
It's right there.
I got it now. That was.
Yeah.
No, we never used to have to make a motion to receive an application, but I guess we'll do it. I make a motion to receive application 26ZBA2, owner Drive-In LLC, applicant Sammy P. Inc. for location approval of Connecticut DMV recycler license at 1080 Route 32, Uncasville, Connecticut, and set a public hearing for our next regularly scheduled meeting on June 3rd, 26th at 6 p.m. here in Council Chambers. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, now I'm going to make a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and second. All in favor?
Aye.
So
aye.
I have some exhibits here that you have to have, Gloria. You knew it was coming, right?
The recording's still on.
Okay.